from two lenses. From the employee perspective, we had to rethink employee expectations. We had been proud as a function to say that we were always available to our people, a human-to-human contact. Call me and I'll answer or help you. And we had to resolve the fact that isn't the way every employee wants to be connected, right? Who does want to talk to a person when they call them, when they have a problem? You want to chat? You want to solve it with any of your own instructions that you can find online? You want to watch a video? But we had to first say, what do employees want and need from us? So that when they have a need that requires that human interaction, there are things like employee relations, issues, career coaching and advice that sort of takes that next level.
Hello and welcome to the Future Proof HR Podcast, where we explore cutting edge trends shaping the future of HR, people operations, and overall the way we work. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, founder and CEO at Cleary. Today, I'm honored to welcome Amy Boak, the Chief People Officer at Kelly, where she leads transformative HR initiatives to empower over 5,300 employees worldwide. Amy connects people to meaningful work, which fosters inclusion and drives organizational success. With an experience spanning from companies such as Allied Financial, all the way to her current role, and many other organizations in between, Amy's strategic approach to workforce innovation inspires companies to embrace the full humanity of what it means to be an employee. Now, without further ado, Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I want to dive right into something we were talking about earlier on, which is about HR transformation. And could you share a little bit about some of the changes you made in terms of transformation for the HR function at Kelly?
I'd be happy to. It's interesting. The word transformation, years ago when Kelly was embarking on this transformative work, I said to one of my colleagues who's not in consulting, colleagues are a friend, and I said, we're going through a transformation. She said, oh, layoffs. I'm like, not necessarily, right? But it's interesting how that word has such an interesting connotation in the vernacular of the country. But for me, when I joined Kelly nearly 5 years ago, I looked around at my team and I realized we were mired in a lot of really administrative manual work that I hadn't seen in a few years. And I looked at their potential and capabilities and I thought, team, we've got to figure this out. At the time, we didn't have the resources or the funding to be able to make really strong technology innovations, and we had to get our process work in order. And so I asked my team, like, hey, what can we take responsibility for? I want you to see your agentic, like, control it within yourself. And so I invited my team to, like, be smart, simple, sustainable in their work, and to be scrappy, right? I empowered my team to get grumpy. I'm like, listen, I know you're capable of so much more than you're being asked to do. Let's lean into that. Let's work together on how we can make the work that we do more meaningful, more fun. And so we created some play and experience in it to try to unlock the potential of the team.
So it's interesting that you mentioned the mindset, right? Lean into what you find that you're grumpy about as a source of inspiration for things that you want to change, and empowering your own team to make these decisions. Could you tell us a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of the transformation with that mindset, especially as it might relate to folks in HR departments in many other organizations?
Absolutely. I think we often lean first on technology and we think technology will solve it, right? If I just had this fill in the blank new shiny object technology, that will make my job more efficient, effective. But you really have to start in the process work, right? I grew up, my first 10 years of my career was in manufacturing. I did a lot of lean work. I got Six Sigma black belt trained. And you realize so much of it is getting the process. And when you get the process, then the technology can enable it. And so I knew that when I was looking to empower my team, it was really about asking them to interrogate their own processes. Why do we have 5 steps from X to Y? Why do we have 2 levels of approval for something that only needs one? Why do we have manual intervention for something that could be direct access? And so it was really taking that time to say, what is within our control and authority to change? And then partnering, obviously, with the right control groups to deliver on it. But it was opening the mindset, but then also seeing the possibility. And then we started to track and monitor each and every time. And it really came out of my days in manufacturing where we said, we had 10 people on the line. We want to try to figure out how to do it with 8 people. So you lock the people in a room and you say, you've got 3 days to figure out how to change the process on the line to move from 10 people to make the part to 8. Let's go. And it was using a lot of that same methodology and approach within the teams.
You can take that mindset all the way to its end of just like being completely ruthlessly efficient in everything that you're doing. But arguably the point of an HR function is it's not just about efficiency, right? You're trying to deliver something of strategic value to the organization. So how do you think about balancing both sides of that coin?
It's a great call out. You're exactly right. For me, it's using transformation in the really positive centered word. It's around first putting the work in the right cost channel, right? If we think the function is being perceived as transactional, you have to resolve that transactional work and then build the capability, the value proposition, and the business case for the work that HR can do that is driving business, that is driving business value, business impact, and helping to create business success. And so you're right. We absolutely have a role to serve, but it's resolving that which gets in the way of how HR is perceived in many cases, even still today.
So then what is a strategic value? Do you have any examples that you can share of like how you can transform an organization and leave the stakeholders, whether that's the execs or your customers in terms of your employee base, feeling like this is now a better organization that fits in and helps me do my job in some kind of way?
Absolutely. From two lenses, from the employee perspective, we had to rethink employee expectations. We had been proud as a function to say that we were always available to our people, a human-to-human contact, and call me and I'll answer or help you. And we had to resolve the fact that isn't the way every employee wants to be connected, right? Who does want to talk to a person when they call them, when they have a problem? You want to chat? You want to solve it with any of your own instructions that you can find online? You want to watch a video? But we had to first say, what do employees want and need from us? So that when they have a need that requires that human interaction, there are things like employee relations issues, career coaching and advice that sort of takes that next level. We wanted to make sure we had access and availability and capabilities to help there. And from a leader perspective, as a function, you have to get everything in order before you have a right to sit and offer a business strategy. Your data has to be right. Your processes have to be solid. You have to know the business. And building that capability, building that purpose, so that when an HR person's sitting with the leadership team, they're seen as an equal partner and they're advising and inquiring about the business decisions as much as they are about the HR process.
Okay, so I definitely want to dig into that a little bit more, the role of data and also the HRBP kind of function specifically as that's evolved. But overall, I'm curious, just even about the structure of the team in terms of either groups or titles, how did that evolve with the transformation? Was it a completely different set of functions? Did you evolve the way the structure of the HR organization was in this transformation? Or was it really about mindset and like how the roles were being executed on, but it's really the same functional org chart?
It's a hybrid. There's a lot of similarity in the way the organization was constructed previous, but in many cases, it's around the execution and where the work is. So work that was sitting in the HR business partner channel is now sitting in either a direct access or a shared service channel. So it's tier zero, tier one. And then what we've done is built up the capabilities and expectations, and in many cases, reduced the number of consultant level individuals working with the business and raise that level of engagement. So the structure was generally right. There are things within the centers of excellence where we stretched capabilities. So we didn't have, I used to tease, coming out of really large organizations that have 100 people in their leadership and development team alone, right? People are swimming like in their lane back and forth. We're more like a synchronized swim team, right? Sometimes you're at the bottom pushing people up in the water, and sometimes you're at the top of the pyramid and doing the synchronized swim event. And we operate like that. So we're pulling people in and out in our people strategy and experience group where there is not one person for. There's a team that flexes in and out to support the solutions and support for those leadership teams and those interventions as needed.
That's interesting. And I think one of the things you mentioned was the HRBP function, specifically giving them the room to be more consultative. And this is something I've heard before. I wonder if you would agree with this, which is that there's a lot of transactional work that goes into the hands of HRBPs, even though the role specifically is supposed to not have that, and you end up having operational functions and centers of excellence that are supposed to take these things away. But in practice, I hear both from people on the ground who are doing that function, as well as chief people officers, that there's still a lot of that transactional work in their hands. Has that been your experience as well? And how are you subtract that work, right, so that there could be more focus?
This has been a conversation and a journey I've been on both at my prior employer and then at Kelly today. And there's a couple of levels to it, right? First, it's the person's comfortability and confidence, right? There are many people who came into the function of HR because they wanted to be in the business of helping people. And so if you define yourself as the people enabler and the people helper, then you see these transactions as like the endorphins that you're putting off in your body every day. And you're like, gosh, I helped 20 people today. And so your value is measured by your ability to deliver that support for 20 people. But when I say, hey, yes, that's true, and I appreciate you're wanting to help them, but what if we gave them a Power BI app so that everything was right at their fingertips and they didn't have to wait for you to respond? They didn't have to wait for, and instead I asked you to consume this information, consume this, and become better equipped at organizational design, strategic consulting, coaching for high-performing teams or resolving performance gaps? What if I helped you to be on design teams, helping to solution new business products? Wouldn't that be really terrific to know that the other things they cared for? Because the business has no patience. If the data's not right and they can't get, and you've paid somebody wrong or it wasn't on time or the letter wasn't right, there's no patience for it, right? You've got to get that right. But get your blocking and tackling right, and then build the capabilities and show the HR business partners. I'm watching it happen today where I'm seeing these HRBPs who've been in those roles where they had to suffer through all of that transactional work go, oh, wait, I get to come over here and play and design and build. And you can see them, the swagger they're building, just the confidence that they're ushering into. But it's part process, technology, data, and human capability.
Yeah. So that motivation, I think the way you were talking about that, it's self-talk, right? Or it's the motivation that's been built intrinsically for one over a career of looking to help people, right? And being responsive and with a service-oriented mindset. But I guess you're preaching that same mindset, but working towards a higher calling in some ways, right? Like a bigger project, a bigger impact with more leverage versus the day-to-day things, which need to happen as well, but then maybe it's not your direct role. But that's a fascinating kind of transition that I see often within HR teams. You're talking about that within your transformation.
I'd love to credit my peer, our science, engineering, technology, business unit president, Hugo Milan, talks about it and says, sometimes you have to put people in a place of discomfort where you have to stretch them into these new work, these new responsibilities, and ask them to pick up this higher value work. Get them excited about them, but stretch them to a place of discomfort where they realize I can't keep holding on to this other work, right? And then we say we have technology, we have process, we have offshore teams, we have a shared service center. They'll take care of that because you've tasted this, like the value, the excitement, the interest, and this naturally sheds when you've stretched people into those places.
Let me just go one more round on this, because taking the mindset of that person, I understand, Amy, we have all these teams, but my VP is asking me to get this fixed and I need to get it fixed today because ultimately they're my customer. And this process that we have in place, for whatever reason, there's like an issue there and there always seems to be an issue and I need to fix this now so that we can continue with a good relationship and good customer service for my VP. Is that something you've heard?
Absolutely.
Something like that? Something that rhymes with that?
Like how many different dances can you do to that song? Yes. And think about like all that you said, that they do have process documentation to know that this process breaks X number of times. Do you have somebody coming in to determine where the challenge hits to fix it? But as you're speaking about that, years ago, I took an improv class. And it was because I grew up large public high school, large public university. I didn't learn how to speak. I stumbled a lot in these types of interactions. And so I took improv at the suggestion of my leader at the time. And I loved it because you have to be really comfortable with whatever happens, you've got to be able to adjust it. And I think a lot about that because what you've just said is yes, and yes, you got to get that solved and you got to work on this big deal, like this bigger project. So how do you stay in the yes, and means I've got a team that has my back, that they're going to make sure I get whatever I need in order to get done. And I know I've got somebody I can call who's going to make sure that gets done and I can deliver on this fill in the blank bigger nut that I've got to crack.
That's a great mindset to borrow. So then you mentioned the other area about the transformation I wanted to dig into a little bit more was you signaled that the role of data being key. And in a very practical way, for the conversation we're just having about the HRBP that's overloaded with transactional work is, hey, here's a report or here's a dashboard that can be live and filled with data that is actually helping your client get information in real time. You don't need to be the gatekeeper. That's like one example of like just literally enabling executive teams with data. But overall, how has that played in the transformation? What has the role of data been in the transformation of the HR function?
Oh, gosh. If I wind the clock back 5 years ago, Kelly had acquired businesses. We had legacy systems and we had disaggregated information. I couldn't get a solid bit of consolidated insights. And so I was fumbling in the dark for all this information that it existed, but putting it in a place that is easy to find, that's sustainable, like a Power BI app that allows it to live with confidence in a day lake and in, is the first step to know you have stable, sustainable data. The second thing is I found over the years is you can't just have the data sitting out there or the reports sitting out there, because until people build the muscles to know that they need that insight and information to drive decisions, it'll be dormant. When I've led like talent management center of excellence or that had the people analytics inside of it, there were only a handful of HR business partners who would go looking. We realized we had to start pushing information and start pushing insights out. We had to do in-depth analytic training to be able to build the capabilities for some of the teams. We had to do a lot of one-on-one. And so it is a multifaceted sort of solution, but you cannot just let it be sitting out there. It will be forgotten. You have got to push it into the environment, whether or not it's through chat or meetings or email. You've got to get that information and the insights being pushed out. So it just shows up. It's like you've got to serve it up to your HR business partner and your leader, wherever they are.
So there's like almost like a client training, right? Of like a new way of, you're used to asking me this every month when you think of the question, but now here's a new way to do it. And you got to reinforce that behavior a little bit and make sure that it gets to be second nature. And I guess implicit within that is that the data is bulletproof, right? It's not getting questioned. And a big part of it is just all of the operational work to make sure that you're providing good data consistently. Yep. Was there work on that front as well?
Yes. And that feels like almost 25 or 30 year old story for me. As you're saying that, I actually was physically moving back to my automotive manufacturing days where I'd walk in with a report that I thought was right, like that I thought had the data right. And then my operating leads would go, yep, that's wrong. And that's wrong. And I'm like, but can we talk about, and they're like, nope, you have no credibility, right? If you don't have the data right, you have no credibility, because there's the confidence just seeps right out of the room and quite frankly, out of your own person, right? And so you do have to get it right, get it stable and have trusted people. Like we have data engineers who know how to do things like headless Python, which I don't even know what that means, but they know how to do these things that ensure that the data is stable, that it's confident, and that when I walk in and I say, here's the insight you need, the leader's, okay, good. Let's go ahead and make that decision.
Pivoting off of that theme, let's talk about just technology in general, right? And software, automation, AI, it's all the buzz lately. How do you see all of this shaping the future of HR? Like, how are you in your organization looking at in the next few quarters, leveraging the latest technology in shaping the future of your organization?
I'd probably start with the bingo card sort of word of the year, AI. I believe when we talk about direct access and all of that self-service and all of that employee empowerment, there's so much value in getting AI right. But it also, on the other hand, the way in which it's being perceived in organizations is almost weaponized in a way that makes it inaccessible and concerning for individuals who are not digitally native. And so for me, I'm very interested in how we can, in the work that we're doing in our organization with our tools, is around making more digitally competent workforce, but at the same time, creating accessibility and insights in a way that makes people curious and interested and empowered by the technologies, as opposed to feeling a level of concern around their own employment stability, right? That they see themselves as part of the workforce of the future because they're feeling empowered by, because they see how much a creative value they get by having access to tools like AI.
There's that fight or flight response that's happening, right? And it's bifurcating a lot of the labor market, especially the domain that both of us are in, which is knowledge workers, right? Where a lot of knowledge work can be done in a completely different way with the latest technology. So even jumping out of, you know, the HR function, but just more broadly, like knowledge work and just the future of work, it seems like there's a big opportunity for any organization to basically show their employees a path, right, of how to learn, how to empower, how to get more towards being successful working alongside these tools. And relatively speaking, I would say early days, but I'm curious if you've seen any like successes or any kind of stories that you could share with us around how to leverage it properly and cultivate that right mindset with an organization. But also, I know Kelly has done this. There's a great report that I'd love to link about just AI's impact on the workforce. You're studying that more broadly amongst your client base. Do you want to discuss any key insights about how you guys see it's impacting the workforce?
Absolutely. And we do every year put out what we call our rework report. And it does take insights from our clients globally and appreciate the opportunity to share the disruption that AI has in the workforce. But I'm also mindful that some of that information is from 2024, and you talk about the speed of change and how much is changing. But summarizing it, it is around executives' comfortability and confidence. And to your point, the concern in our conversation before, the concerns of employees and understanding it. And the bridge in between is to create containers and playgrounds and spaces where people can play and experiment. And that's what I'm proud of what Kelly has done, both in terms of our work and our Kelly company, which is we created an AI council, we created a learning sessions and series, we created a space for individuals to put use cases and test cases out, we started building capabilities, we have our own tool, we call her Grace, who helps us enable some of our processes in recruiting and sourcing in a way that it keeps the human at the center and our candidates at the center and our people at the center, but it enables and empowers us. And we're really proud of that work.
That's amazing, because that's the opposite of having the ostrich head in the sand, like looking for things to happen to you and then react probably way too late. I think that's amazing, because at least for now, that is actually an advantage, right? I think that for any employer value proposition that, hey, if you come and work here, you're going to get a particular way to engage with how the world at large is changing and how you can be a part of it and change your skills to evolve with it. And then you also mentioned the recruiting bot, Grace. I'd be curious to hear like what you're doing there in specific. Please share more.
Yeah, I just want to go back to something you said, because it rings true to language I use on a regular basis across a number of dimensions, which is, you said, having something done to you. When we're talking about changing the ways of work and all of our change management capabilities, I have a small change team. The language we use is you have to do things with and for people, not to them. With, my shorthand is always with and for, not to. And so if people feel as though something's happening to them, then you see the shutting down, the concern. So I just want to go back and say your language, right, is getting people engaged earlier, letting them be part of the design and development, letting them see how they can be part of that journey. I had a change leader 20 years ago say to me, people have to see it, say it, touch it 17 times for it to stick. 17 times, right? That seems like an implausible number to get to, but it's really not when you say, hey, I want everyone to consume 2 bits of AI data or AI insights every quarter. Put in your goals. Doesn't matter what it is. It can be an article. It can be a video. It can be something on the MOOC, something on our learning center, but that's 1 bit. And then you publish an article that says, hey, here's how we've enabled. You put something in your town halls about how we've been enabling process speeds through automation. We talk about like how our own phones and all of our own live technologies are automation enabled. So you're trying to break down these mental models around fear-based and more towards play, experiment, and empower. So I wanted to say that. And then back to your question about grace, there's so much great work to be done around using a grace tool to help simplify, to streamline, to summarize. I just got our survey data back on something and I put it through the AI tool and I said, please summarize this 1500 responses. And it came back in 15 seconds and it said, 21% of your respondents said this, 15% said that, 10% said this, 5% said this. My CEO calls me and says, hey, Amy, have you read the survey results? I'm like, I did. 20% said this, 15% said this, 10% said this. He goes, you're right. I'm like, oh.
Well, talk to Grace.
But then we could do something about it. We weren't over-indexing on one single line of data because there are some of those comments that you can over-index on a single one. And I've seen leaders do that. In this case, we could go, that's an outlier. Here's the sentiment. And here's what we're going to do about it. Because we could summarize the insights, right? It's an enabler.
And the time between getting the initial data to actually getting to insights and decisions and action is much tighter, right?
We used Gallup surveys a couple decades ago. You'd fill out the survey. You'd wait 30 right. days. You get the result. Now you have brand new teams anyways. You're not in the same management structures. Now you get the results. You got to sit and talk about it and the teams lead them and look the same as we did 30 days ago. Now with these tools, we closed our survey last Friday and today, Thursday, my leaders had their results on Tuesday, 2 days later.
So acceleration is the name of the game. So this next question might be a fool's errand. And you already alluded to the fact that the rework survey was based on 2024 data about AI and we're just a couple of months into 2025 and you question its relevance. So that said, if you're just thinking about the function of human resources or the CHRO's office or the chief people officer's office evolving over the next decade, how do you see that changing?
In almost every dimension, except for keeping humans at the center. The how we do our work will continue to evolve, but the why we do is unchanging, right? The research is clear that humans want human. They want to be led by humans. We need humans who have deep empathy, deep compassion. We were honored to have Professor Emeriti, Dr. Jane Dutton, on the board for many years at Kelly. She's a University of Michigan professor who leads the Center for Positive Organizations at the University of Michigan. She talks so much about compassion and empathy in the workplace. And as these technologies are enabled and as these bots are doing their work, we need higher empathy, higher capable leaders who can meet the needs of this workforce, both generationally as it changes. And so the role of HR will keep at the center, but we won't have to think much about pay changes, ADA accommodations, and requisition mapping and approvals, making sure that FLSA things are met, things that just should be in the background that we have confidence because we've got the audits and the reviews that are sending insights to us, but that we're really thinking about how we're unlocking the potential of the humans who do the differentiated work. You know, Kelly has bots that we put on assignment right next to humans and some of our clients, right? So that the humans doing the complicated work that requires the capability of a human and the bots doing all the transactions. So.
Interesting. So then if you're backing from that into giving advice to a friend, son, or daughter who is just considering going into the profession, what would you advise them around what skill sets they might want to pick up as they come in as a junior person into the world of HR?
I think implied in what I was saying before, and I didn't say it maybe as succinctly as I would have liked to, is this role of fully resolving. We are not a transactional function. We are not administrative. That we are truly working in the strategic business driving success space. And inherent in that is the consulting capabilities, the business knowledge, the financial acumen to be equipped to keep that center compass, the moral, ethical, human-centered compass, but to have the capabilities that surround it that allows you to advance the function through these technology enablements.
It's fascinating because I'm just thinking back to the history of the function before it was HR and before it was benefits and when it was personnel. It's almost the exact opposite, right? Like it was an office that was created several decades ago within management, within organizations to help be compliant and make sure people get paid. And then a lot of transactions happened per a standard operating procedure.
Yes. And yes, you're exactly right. It was personnel. And then it was HR. And that's, I don't think it was an accident. I know I was very intentional. We reshaped our function to the people organization. Humans don't want to be resources. We are the people organization. We are here and our role is to unlock the potential of people so that we can live out our noble purpose of enriching lives through the dignity of work. And that shifts the mind. But you're exactly right. I lived it, right? I've been in this field for 30 plus years. I had a leader once say to me, like, you're just here to hire and fire. That's your only job, hire and fire. I'd like to do a lot more than that.
So actually, that brings me a question in my mind, which is the demand side of it, right? So the folks who are hiring chief people officers or HR folks in general at any kind of level, is the demand side of what is expected also shifting in the same kind of way? Or is that evolving in your view? Or to put a fine point on it, do you think it'll be much rarer to find that executive today for one of your peers saying, yeah, we just need someone to hire and fire people?
I think it's evolving and will continue to evolve based on the lived experience of the leader. And it's incumbent on us to show where it may not be intuitively known. And I think there's a whole range of lived experiences and education and knowledge of. And in some cases, I've worked with leaders who are incredibly progressive who say, I expect in the Ram Charan, like the triumvirate of the CFO, CHRO, and CEO, and this is my expectation. And I've also worked with, don't call us, we'll call you. And having to say, I hear you. However, here's something I can offer. Have you considered? Here's some information, like leaning into a place when you may not be naturally invited. And I know our CEO will often say, fill the chair. And what I love about that is that he's inviting us, not just me, but each of us in our roles to step outside of our defined domain and be an enterprise leader. I encourage that on my team. It doesn't matter if it's not in your job description. We need to be flexing, which I think is some of your future of work thinking, is we have to flex capabilities. Kelly's flexing with some of our products, right? We've got products like Statement Works where we say we can deliver and do this differently. And I think that's what's going to happen within the function. But it'll take time and leaders and a lot of capability building within our existing HR teams.
So without any further ado, are you ready then, Amy, for us to get into the lightning round of questions? We're going to go 30 seconds or less, fast paced.
Okay. Hit me.
Okay. What's a piece of career advice that you've received that stood out to you over the years and you'll be willing to share with us if you've got one?
Absolutely. I had a leader once tell me he didn't measure people by how they behave when they got what they wanted. He measured people by how they behave when they didn't get what they wanted. And that really stuck to my core about being how I responded and how I observed other people responding when things just didn't go their way.
Sounds like great parenting advice too for my toddler. Is there a book, podcast, resource, or some kind of piece of content that's had a big impact on you over the last year?
Yeah. I recently listened to Adam Grant's podcast with Sam Altman, and I really liked how Sam could make the connection, but the Sam and Adam's conversation about keeping the human in the center of all of the OpenAI and AI work and what they see the future of AI and connectivity. And I really liked that. And I would encourage anyone, if you've not listened to it, go find it. It was a great piece of podcast.
We'll make sure we add a link there. And then if you can wave a magic wand and change one thing about the way that HR and people functions around the world operate and make that the new standard, what would that be?
Probably to our conversation we just had is there's this collective capability, both lift that we're all operating with this business-centered, human-centered capability. And that we've shed all of this legacy, transactional, administrative process identity.
Has there been any kind of transformational career moment or decision that you've taken along your journey that when you look back on it, was a pivot point
At the risk of oversharing, I had a really devastating moment in my life where I had meant to be in a place of welcoming a new baby to my life, and that didn't happen. And in the grieving process, I returned to work and I was invited to apply to a role in another state to take on this big job that I wasn't qualified for. And I thought, you know what? Doors open and doors close and windows open. And I leapt. I just think sometimes bad things happen and you have to lean into these new opportunities and these stretches and move into places of discomfort, even when things just don't even make sense. And that would be something that sort of stuck with me. That's been 25 years, 26 years ago. But I hinged that, like, my career shifted exponentially because a bad thing happened and I took a leap on something that was risky and uncertain, and I never looked back.
That's incredible. Thank you for sharing that, Amy. And I think that's a good a note as any to wrap it up here today. I want to say, again, huge thank you, Amy, for this conversation and talking both about the specific transformation that you have ignited at Kelly over the last 5 years, but also how you're seeing that apply more broadly within the context of your career and also bravely into the future that we're all going into day by day. And thank you for your insights on how we can future-proof HR and the people function and inspiring us to think differently about managing human capital. So with that said, to everyone out there, until next time, folks. Bye now.
Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slackbot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.